It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish, co-editor at Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
All right. Well, we do have plenty to cover, starting with, since we just have an election, what, a week and a half away?
Yeah, 10 days.
10 days. 10 days and counting.
And the absentee ballots have already been out for a week and a half, and we probably should have done this last week, but, you know, every time an election comes around, we spew out our editorial endorsements just because, well, you know, people ask. And so today is no exception.
All right. Well, let's dive in.
All righty. In terms of Eat the State, which is what we've historically done as I've gone through the Eat the State endorsements, it's a little bit different this time than it has been in the past because historically it's been a case where the folks or sort of the core group who put out Eat the State pretty much leave it to whoever's going to write the endorsement article to make up their own mind, unless it's a particularly contentious endorsement in the sense of, you know, people within the ETS crew having, you know, several different sentiments as to how to vote. For instance, the 2004 presidential election was like that. And the people who've written the endorsements have historically been some combination of myself and or Maria Tomchik. So it's always been the same people who are on the air on Saturday morning. A little bit different this time because co-editor Jeff Stevens, who is not on the Saturday morning program, wrote it this time around, and I don't fully agree with him on a couple of these, so I will note that and where my opinions diverge from his. But when you go online at eatthestate.org, and you will find the endorsements up there, and those will be his. And he did a fine job. You know, by and large, I have no quarrel with what he did. I just have slightly different priorities in a couple of races, and I'll note that. But so that's the caveat, along with the usual thing that you know, these are opinions, and make up your own mind. And voting doesn't change everything. Organizing does. But we start off with one of those races in which we didn't have particular consensus within the ETS group, which is the Senate race with Maria Cantwell and Mike McGavick, and then third-party candidacies by Aaron Dixon and Bruce Guthrie. Nobody particularly wanted to vote for Mike McGavick.
That's surprising.
which is not a surprise, since the man's kind of, well, you know, vile. But there was some sentiment, particularly if the race were closed, to vote for Cantwell. And this is sort of how Jeff Stevens came down. He's like, well, Cantwell, but if not Cantwell, vote your conscience with either Dixon or Guthrie. So it was sort of we didn't really quite come out and say it three-way endorsement that it will probably satisfy nobody. But I think Jeff personally was feeling like if the race was close, that Cantwell needs to be voted in. She needs to win this race. And not so much because Cantwell has deserved re-election is because A, McGavick is worse, which is, you know, just a simple fact. And B, it looks very likely that it's going to be close one way or another to a 50-50 split in the Senate. And having Democratic control of the Senate in this case could make a huge difference, if nothing else, because Democratic control would mean Patrick Leahy chairs the Judiciary Committee. He's one of the most progressive members of the Senate from Vermont. And with Justice Stevens being in his upper 80s, there's a pretty good chance that Bush may have another Supreme Court nomination in the next 2 years. If he does, if somebody like Alito or Roberts comes up and gets through, which would probably happen under a Republican Senate-controlled Senate, you know, it would certainly eviscerate any remaining chances for Roe v. Wade, but also any number of other decisions over the next 20 years or so. So for that reason alone, it's worth putting Cantwell back into office. That said, I haven't seen a poll personally that has Cantwell at less than about 10 points up recently. I think she's going to win this race. McGavin doesn't seem to have a lot of momentum. Those numbers have been pretty steady over the last couple months. And so I think there's plenty of room here to vote your conscience, and I don't think Cantwell has done a job that merits a vote from progressives. She's and this is me speaking here and not Jeff's endorsement article. This is one place where we diverge, that, you know, it's not just the war on rec. It's also free trade. It's also judicial appointments. It's also the Patriot Act. You know, you can go on. Cantwell is actually one of the more conservative Democrats in the Senate. And there are two really pretty good in terms of their stances on issues, alternative candidates running, and Aaron Dixon from the Greens and Bruce Guthrie from the Libertarians. I'm actually more impressed with Bruce Guthrie, and I'm probably going to upset a lot of progressives here in Seattle who know and admire Aaron Dixon, and I do too. He's had a remarkable history of community activism here. But what I've found and what some longtime activists that I respect have found in talking to the two candidates is that Guthrie is simply better informed on a broader range of issues, and he's run a much broader campaign. You know, you go out to the rest of the state in the last couple of months, and I see signs for Guthrie in a lot of places, and I haven't seen any signs for Dixon, you know, outside progressive neighborhoods in the city of Seattle. It just seems to be a much more broad-based campaign and a much more successful campaign in getting out the word on messages like the war in Iraq, gay marriage, you know, the war on drugs. There are a number of issues on which Guthrie is very good. So I'm going to go ahead and cast for him. But I can certainly understand the rationale for voting for either Dixon or Cantwell, for that matter.
Very good. All right, moving along to Congress?
Yeah, the House of Representatives. Yeah. And the rest of these will be faster. I won't take nearly as much time on them. We have three congressional, House of Representative races in the area, only one that's contested, but the one that's contested is pretty much a toss-up. So if you lived in the 8th Congressional District on the east side, or you know other people who do, friends, neighbors, colleagues, etc., urge them to vote early and vote often for Darcy Berner. She would be a vast, vast improvement over Dave Reichert in the House of Representatives. The other two races, Jim McDermott and Jay Inslee, pretty much unopposed. So those are pretty straightforward.
And don't you generally say that in the slam dunks like that people should either vote for the opponent or...
I'll get to one where I want people to vote for the opponent. But, I think both McDermott and Inslee, they have token opposition. Actually, I think Inslee may not have any. But Inslee's done a pretty good job. I think McDermott has done I'm not thrilled with him, but he's been very good on the war and some other things. But there are certainly, I'm not even going to mention all the judicial races except for the state Supreme Court because they're all running unopposed. Unopposed races, I don't think, deserve a vote generally.
All right. Okay, continue.
So the next one down the ballot is the state Supreme Court, and this is also an important one. Steve Johnson, who is a Republican state legislative member from Covington, I believe, or Auburn, somewhere down in there, is running as a nonpartisan candidate for the state Supreme Court against Susan Owens. Now, if you remember in the primary in September, when John Groans spent all that money trying to unseat Jerry Alexander, and it was through basically the BIAW, the Building Industry Association of Washington, which is the most conservative and money-flush sort of Republican lobby shop in Washington State. They're trying basically to pack the state Supreme Court. They did it with three different candidates. The only incumbent who didn't get the 50% necessary to run a runoff was Susan Owens because the vote was split five ways. So this is a repeat of that race. Susan Owens needs and deserves a vote against Steve Johnson, who would be pretty bad, actually. So that's the state Supreme Court. Other than that, there are some state legislative races, and you know these really are all unopposed. And it's there are a few that deserve votes just because they're good people. Adam Klein in the 37th, Ed Murray in the 43rd in the state Senate, Bob Hasegawa in the House of Representatives in the 11th District, number 43. This is the six-way race in September, and Jamie Peterson came out of that the worst of the six candidates. Jeff Stevens had a suggestion in the ETS article that I really like, which is to write in instant runoff voting, because the three progressives in that six-way race would have beaten Peterson had any two of them, let alone all three of them, their votes all gone to one candidate. So Peterson has pretty much token Republican opposition, write in instant runoff voting, because that's really what we need in a situation like that. And for all the other legislative seats in Seattle, we need some serious primary challenges to take liberal Democratic deadwood from Seattle out of the state Senate and House, or at least challenge them to do their jobs more appropriately. So that's something to remember for next time.
All right. I know instant runoff voting is on the ballot in, I believe, Pierce County.
Pierce County, Measure 3. So for anybody listening down there, support it. Support it heavily.
Very good.
City Council is the next on the list, and this is another one that it's essentially unopposed, but it's an interesting situation. Sally Clark was appointed to the City Council by the council early this year to replace Jim Compton after he abruptly resigned. She then has to face a special election when the next election comes around, which is the next week, but it's only for 1 year to fill out Compton's term, so she'll have to run again in 2007. The problem with this is that she's unopposed this year. The reason she's unopposed is that it costs so much money to run a citywide race for city council, and no one wants to do it against somebody who's had some time to fundraise and be an incumbent when it's only for a one-year term and you have to turn around and run again next year. So Sally is being opposed only by Stan Lipman, who's this, you know, sort of wacko perma candidate who's not really credible at all. I'm going to diverge from Jeff here. I'm going to vote for Stan Lipman just because people like Sally Clark need an opponent. And in particular, Seattle also needs an alternative to having 9 at-large seats on city council, because that just makes it prohibitive for anybody to run effective campaigns, particularly against an incumbent, unless you've just got a truckload of money available to you. It really does. Aside from the fact that there's this whole neighborhood movement, which I'll get to in a minute, that exists precisely because there's no accountability on city council, it's just really hard to get accountability because people that come out of those kind of movements can't afford to run for council. They can't even afford to raise the issues in those races, much less win the positions.
Mm. All right. Moving along.
Yeah, we have next, I think we're down to all the different ballot measures. Yeah, we are. So let's start with the state. There are 3 statewide ballot measures this time. I-920, if you've been reading the Seattle Times at all, you'll know that the estate tax is on the ballot. Vote no. We need to have an estate tax, and frankly, Frank Blethyn is so desperate to have it repealed in order that he can pass the Times onto his heirs. Somebody should really point out to him that he's the 4th generation of Blevins and all the Blethyns, and all the previous generations paid that tax and passed it on just fine. So maybe he just isn't a very good businessman. I-933 is the next one, and this is probably the most important thing on the ballot this year. This is the property rights measure that would essentially eviscerate all of the land use planning, the Growth Management Act, zoning regulations, all this. Basically, it's similar to Measure 37 in Oregon, except it's even broader and more poorly defined. It would require that property holders, and this includes developers, it includes anyone who has a property of any kind, if they want a use for that property that government regulation is not permitting, government is required to either waive the regulation or reimburse for not just the cost, but the lost profits from that use. There have been a couple different pretty credible studies saying this measure would cost between $7 and $9 billion out of the state general fund within the next 5 years. It would also gut environmental laws. It would gut land use planning. It would exacerbate sprawl. And this is something that's put up by the Farm Bureau, which is another, very conservative lobby shop. There's a similar measure in California, et cetera. This desperately needs as many no votes as we can, particularly because it's likely to be popular in the rest of the state. So King County can make a huge difference in trying to make this go down. It's been ahead in the polls, so it desperately needs people to turn out on Election Day and vote this thing down. This is one where we can and should make a difference. The other one that's on the ballot statewide is I-937, renewable energy. And Jeff voted yes on this. I'm going to vote yes also, but it has an important caveat. This is the requirement that by, I believe it's 2020, state utilities get 15% of their energy from renewable energy sources. The one problem with this is that some of the backing for this measure has come from private energy companies that are investing heavily in renewable energy that want those contracts. So in some ways, it's a backdoor to privatization of public utilities like SPU, Seattle all public utilities. There's also plenty of time to figure out ways in which the utilities themselves can develop that alternative energy. So voting yes on that on I-937 because we need alternative energies and not just the hydroelectric power that the region currently depends on, because some of those dams really ought to come down in the future too. So that's statewide. Let's see what else we got here. Seattle has several ballot measures this time. Almost forgot. There's also a House Joint Resolution 4223. This would be a constitutional amendment to the state that would raise the property tax exemption for small businesses from 3% to 15%, and that's kind of a no-brainer. That's also a yes on 4233. Going down to local propositions now and ballot measures, of which there are several, I-91, this is the Citizens for More Important Things initiative that would require that any public money being spent on a new playpen for the Sonics make a profit for the city. In other words, it bans the city from using taxpayer money for a new arena, unless we're going to get it back, and then some. That's also a no-brainer, yes, and it's going to be very interesting to see how our legislators and movers and shakers try and get around this when it passes, but it does need to pass. So yes on I-91. We have other ones also. Referendum measure number one, not to be confused with Seattle Proposition number one. Measure number one is the strip club regulation, 4 feet for lap dances, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not eager to defend strip clubs or adult entertainment. I find it pretty off-putting, politically and aesthetically. I thought Jeff put it really well in his article that this measure is, prudish to the point of pathos, and that it would also actually cost the city a complete waste of money trying to enforce this. I mean, who really cares if lap dancers get within 4 feet of their customers, except for the dancers who don't make nearly as much in tips? So vote no on that. We also have a charter amendment. A couple of different important charter amendments. There's a whole slew of them that I'm not going to go into, but the ones I want to highlight are ones that are a product of neighborhood movements. Number 8, vote yes on. That would have the Parks Department and a couple of other department heads having to be reapproved by the City Council every 4 years, so you don't get people like Ken Bounds who become autocrats and not responsive to neighborhood needs, or at least there's some measure of accountability when some people like Bounds are very close to the mayor, as they are right now. And then also, Charter Amendment number 9 has to do with the Planning Commission that controls neighborhood planning plans, and that commission has 15 members, all of whom are now nominated and appointed by the mayor. Nichols has had his agenda. This would change it to 7 by the mayor, 7 by the council, and a 15th that's appointed by the other 14. So again, a lot more accountability. So vote yes on number 9. Then we have Charter Amendment. Those were the charter amendments. Seattle Proposition number 1, and that's the roads proposition. Jeff said yes on this, and I understand that because the need to fix potholes and address infrastructure is something that local governments, and for that matter state and federal, have been badly overlooking in recent years, and it does need to be done. My concern with this is how it's being done, that it's being done through a property tax raise that's not as high as originally proposed and not as open-ended as originally proposed, but it still could basically be an indefinite tax. It's still a fairly high tax, and this is a task that needs to be done, but it needs to be done through a different, fairer mechanism. So I'm going to say vote no on the proposition number 1. And that I think takes us through the ballot.
Very good. All right, and if people want to check up on that, they can get that at the ETS website.
Yes, www.eatthestate.org. And as mentioned, I had a couple places where I diverged with Jeff, but basically, I needed a fine job.
Very good. All right.
People call me Joe.
I was just saying, man, that was a weird slip.
Yeah.
All right. Moving along quickly, seeing how far we can get through all this local Seattle school board
Yes, Rajmanis, the superintendent, resigned this week. Of course, the school district is in all kinds of trouble. Apparently, one of the triggering things was the very ugly school board meeting last week at which he was, I don't remember the exact details, but somebody told him to go back to India or something like that. It was just ugly. Obviously, the district is in a lot of trouble. We mentioned last week that the reform school board members that are all up for re-election next year are going to have a hard time. This is going to put even more pressure on them because they've got to come up with a new superintendent. The last two superintendents have been financial people. The person before that, John Stanford, had no background in education. They really need somebody who, A, has a background in education, and B, has the political savvy to get the rest of this political elites in this city behind them to go to the state legislature and say, we need better funding for K through 12 in this state, because that's really what's hurting the school district. It's not just mismanagement of funds that they haven't been able to dig themselves out from a hole over. It's the fact that the state itself underfunds education in this state, and it's really hurting places like Seattle that have a lot more special needs populations, a lot more ESL, et cetera, than more rural districts do. So we need that kind of a leader. It's going to be very interesting to see how that process plays out, but it also is going to put a lot of pressure on the school board.
All right, and a person who is not a household name but should be, Mick Dinsmore.
Yes, he is the CEO of the Port of Seattle and the sort of sleaze fest that goes on there and corporate back scratching and so forth. He had already announced his retirement coming up in a few months, and so the Port Commission, in its usual generous fashion, voted him a 6% raise. So he's now making $340,000 a year. At the same time, there have been reports trickling out from City Hall over the past several weeks that, frankly, I haven't had the stomach to rebroadcast, that getting serious consideration to replace Mac Dinsmore as the head of Port of Seattle is Tim Cease, who is who is nicknamed the Shark. He is the deputy mayor for Greg Nickels and has been the enforcer in pushing the pro-development agenda of Greg Nickels through the city of Seattle over the last several years. If you're talking about wanting greater accountability, greater public participation, less overt hostility to the public and to the King County taxpayer out of the Port of Seattle, that would be exactly the wrong choice. It would be the worst possible choice. So, again, start paying attention to the five members of the Port of Seattle's commission. They're the folks who are ultimately going to have to make the hire. And again, they need to make a much, much better hire than that.
All right. Wanted to hit at least one of the national items here. Boeing has a new, not new,
no, well, it's a division whose role in the global war on terror was exposed this week in a talk of the town item in the October 30th issue of New Yorker, a subsidiary called Jeppesen that does travel arrangements. Well, it turns out that one of its most lucrative gigs is doing travel arrangements for the CIA for its extraordinary rendition flights. So all those overflights of Britain and Europe that have been so controversial and have gotten all the member states of the European Union in trouble with the EU's human rights regulations because, we're ferrying prisoners to other countries where they can be tortured. That's all being done by a subsidiary of Boeing. So, again, something to remember when we take hometown pride in our industrial behemoths around the area. It's not enough that they're the second largest arms manufacturer in the country and probably one of the larger ones in the world, but they're also actively supporting torture.
All right. And then the other thing, a federal judge and exit polling.
Yes, this is in Florida, which is one of two states that has, Florida actually banned exit polls. Ohio has simply put severe restrictions on them. A federal judge in Florida threw out that law this week, saying that there was no evidence that exit polling affected polling itself in any way whatsoever. Meanwhile, in Ohio, a federal judge had thrown out the original law there. They had promulgated a regulation to replace it, and that is now being litigated as being too broad and unenforceable. So that's going to be resolved in the next week as well.
All right. Jumping to international Afghanistan.
Yeah. A report in the UK Independent this week, which was not picked up by any media in the United States that I could find, oddly enough, that NATO bombing had killed up to 85 civilians in a small town in a district just outside of Kandahar. Now, NATO claims that there were only 12 civilians killed, and that it happened when Taliban fighters took refuge in the civilian homes within the village, and therefore they bombed the homes. The problem with this is that all the people in the village itself say there were no Taliban anywhere near the vicinity. So choose who you want to believe. Either the government of Afghanistan, which is, Karzai, which is not exactly hostile to NATO or the United States, saying that at least 40 and as many as 85 were killed, and the people who survived the attack were saying the same thing. Or NATO, who's saying, we don't know, we have precision weapons, that would never happen. Make up your own mind, but it is yet another indication that, the civilian population of Afghanistan is not particularly impressed with the Western powers, and B, that we are losing that war.
All right, Iraq.
Well, we had a breakthrough this week. We found out that "stay the course" has never been uttered by the president. you can't make this stuff up. I mean, you know, Pravda or the Renmin Erbao, the Chinese newspaper would be proud of this particular this particular incident, where Tony Snow and Dan Bartlett got up in front of the assembled cameras on Monday and said, not only is "stay the course" no longer operative, but you know, we never said that in the first place. The problem, of course, is that they haven't actually announced what a new policy would be. They've just announced that they want to change the slogan. So I think they're taking nominations for new slogans. I ran a little contest on line this week and came up with a few dozen good ones, which I won't go into here, but you can well imagine. Send your suggestions to the White House. What should the new Republican slogan for the policy in Iraq be? There are many, many possibilities, so have fun with it and hope that they actually change the policy sometime soon.
All right, and then quickly, Guardian poll?
Yeah, Guardian poll being done in Britain this week, saying that 60% of Brits want British troops, UK troops, out of Iraq by the end of the year, which is to say in the next 2 months, which is about as fast logistically as you could do it. It really is effectively now, depending on how you ask the question. So the sentiment against the war in Iraq is even higher there than it is here. And, of course, with Tony Blair exiting the government there, it's very much affecting the leadership struggle in Britain as well.
All right. And events.
Yeah, a couple of them. Answer is having an anti-war rally today. It is at noon. It is at the Federal Building for a rally. And then at 1 o'clock, they'll march. The flyer didn't say where to, but they did say they would march. And then on Monday at 10 in the morning, for people who can get off work, CCEJ, the Community Coalition for Environmental Justice, which does great anti-racism environmental work, particularly in the South End, They are having a demonstration at the EPA Region 10 headquarters at 6th and Seneca in downtown Seattle. Turns out that the EPA, at least in Region 10, is abolishing its Office of Civil Rights and Environmental Justice, which basically is the civil rights office that handles urban environmental issues and things like that, and questions of whether race is being is factoring into environmental justice questions. So they're trying to abolish that, and there'll be a demonstration at 10, 6th and Seneca Monday morning.
I wonder if that's tied to the new head of EPA for Washington State. I know that they just had
probably is person. Yes, it's not just Washington State, it's also Idaho, Oregon,
right.
And Washington and Alaska.
Right. You are correct, sir. All right, talking as we do every week with John Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks. It is a free newspaper put out by volunteers. We are in the midst of a fund drive for our 10th anniversary. So if you can donate, that would be most appreciated, because it is how we put out the paper. We don't do any volunteers. It all goes to printing and the postage for subscribers through the mail. So if you can send any donations, PayPal. Some people are working. Some people seem to have trouble with it on the website, or just send stuff to P.O. Box 85541, Seattle 98145. And that, again, also is at the website, www.eatthestate.org. The endorsements are also there. The current issue, and for that matter, all the past issues are also there. And speaking of 10th anniversary, we're having a 10th anniversary party coming up on Sunday, November 12th from 4 to 6 p.m. It's being very generously hosted at the Asteroid Cafe in Fremont. So stop on by on Sunday afternoon, the 12th, and say hi to us. We'll all be there celebrating our 10th anniversary.